Well, first I have to say thank you. Thank you for being here. Thank you for letting me come, but thank you more importantly for you coming, because not everybody's doing church today, and I never thought we would give up church for Lent, but apparently that's just about what's happening. Nothing surprises us anymore. We don't have time to be astonished. We're kind of busy. We got stuff to do. So we miss the astonishing. Now, I think it's astonishing that Disney closed, because they don't close for hurricanes, but so there are some astonishing things happening, I think. But startle us, O God, is a good place to start. God is astonishing. And religion can be predictable, although having met this guy this morning, I'm thinking probably around here it's not so predictable. I think he's likely to call an audible at any moment. But even though religion can be predictable and church can be predictable, God is not predictable. God is not routine. In our story today, we see a lot of things that aren't predictable and routine, but in our usual way, we can kind of miss them. We can just go, yeah, the lady at the well. But Jesus is traveling with a band of Jewish disciples, probably some women among them. We think the word disciples, and we just think those 12 guys are with him, but he had an entourage. And he's traveling, trying to get back home because he was pretty much run out of town. He felt like he couldn't hang around where he was. So he's headed home, and he takes a long cut to go through Samaria. And the disciples are a little hungry and a little disgruntled, and it's like, you know, it's hot, we're tired, we're hungry. Here, you wait here, we're going to go get some food. And they go into town. And a woman, by herself, comes to the well at noon to get water, which is a normal thing for somebody to do, to go get water. I mean, the Jews on the Exodus were ready to stone Moses because they didn't have enough water. But Jesus asks this woman for a drink. Jesus, a Jewish man, asks a Samaritan woman for a drink. Astonishing. Because Jewish people didn't associate with Samaritans, period. And Jewish men didn't talk to women, much less Samaritan women. And she is astonished. And then she says, well, you don't even have a cup. And he says, I got living water. She says, sounds good. I want some. And he says, well, go get your husband. She says, well, I don't have a husband. He says, you're right. Because you've had five husbands, which is two over the legal limit. And the guy you're with now isn't your husband. And she is astonished. He knows who I am. And then they banter about religion, which is a big piece of why the Samaritans and the Jews hate each other, because there was some intermarrying and a building of a new temple. And she's like, yeah, but my temple and your temple, what's the right temple? And he's like, you don't get it. I am the Messiah. Well, then his disciples come back, and they are astonished. It says right in the text, they're astonished. We tend to skip over that because nothing really surprises us, and we're never astonished. But they were astonished that he's sitting there talking to a Samaritan woman. Later, they're astonished because they say, eat something, and he says, I got food you don't know about. And they're like, where did you get food? Astonishing. She takes off. The woman takes off to go tell her people, this guy's in, could he be the Messiah? I don't know. He knows stuff. He knows about me, and he talked to me. And her people all come. All the people that wouldn't talk to her. Because why do you think this woman was there at noon in the heat of the day drawing water by herself? Where's all the other women? Oh, they came as sun was coming up when it wasn't so hot. And they came to visit and share the latest news and the latest gossip. And since she was likely the point of their gossip, she was likely the one they were talking about. And any men that might have been along the way walking at that time of the day would be likely to throw barbs and lewd comments at her. She came by herself at noon because although it was hot, it was more comfortable for her by herself. I work at a jail, I work 40 to 50 hours a week at the Brevard County Jail. There are 300 to 350 women in the Brevard County Jail. We have somewhere between 1,700 and 1,800 inmates at the Brevard County Jail. My women would not want to go to the well with all the other women. They'd go with each other. They'd go with their group. But they're not going to go with the women from the PTA or the soccer moms. So when they get out of jail, they tend to not go to the PTA or the soccer games because somebody's going to make a comment. So a woman in the jail, there was a woman in the jail, she's gotten out recently enough, named Anna. She was arrested for driving on a suspended license. It was her second or third time driving on a suspended license, but still in all, she spent 6 months in the jail for driving on a suspended license. She was evicted from her apartment. She was 60 years old. Her husband was considerably older, like 20 years older. A son of his from a previous marriage came and got him and took him to Tennessee. So when she got out, she had nowhere to live. She didn't have a towel or a fork or an ID. I took her to iDignity in Orlando, and we got her an ID, and she ended up going to Tallahassee to live with a nephew, and she was still searching for her husband. And she found him, and she was on her way to go see him. He was in the hospital, and she found him. It was 6 months after she'd, actually it was more like 8 months at this point, since she had last seen him. And when she got to Atlanta, the nurses called her. She was going from Tallahassee to Tennessee. By the time she got to Atlanta, she got a call. The nurses said, "It's too late, don't come." So she turned around and went back to Tallahassee, and she never saw her husband again because she went in jail for driving on a suspended license. But she found Jesus in jail. I had lunch with her this past week. She knows the love of Jesus. She still praises God every day. She's still seeking permanent lodging. She's staying with friends right now. She's 62 now. She doesn't have enough income to get the kind of apartment she needs, and so she's just kind of stuck. There's also a young woman, 18 years old, in that jail right now named Madeline, who snatched her aunt's cell phone and went running out the door. They called the police. She was arrested for strong-arm robbery and pickpocketing. She's autistic. She's really functioning like about a third grader, but she's in the jail. And I'm working to get her out, to get her into a group home so that she can move forward. She's still a special ed student at O'Galley High School, but she's in jail. So we tend to think of the people in jail as those people. And we as a society have put up a wall between us and them. Because if you've never been arrested, you're on this path. You're on the I-95 of life. But if you've been arrested, we want you on that side of the wall. And there's no windows and doors, and you're not getting over here. Because every job application says, "Have you ever been arrested?" And every apartment application says, "Have you ever been arrested?" And we make sure, we make it doubly hard for you to get a job, to have a place to live, to have a normal life. But as a chaplain, I feel like it's my job to go in there and say, "God loves you. You are a child of God." Now, the Daughters of the King here at St. Peter's of Fishermen have partnered with me for probably about 3 years now, and I send them little prayer slips when I teach. I teach and preach and bring Eucharist to the different pods during the week, and when I teach, I give them these pieces of paper, and they write down their prayer requests, and sometimes they say, "Pray for my children," and sometimes they say, "Pray for my mom who has cancer," and sometimes they say, "Pray for court, get me out of here." But the Daughters of the King have been praying, and it's a very valuable ministry. Intentional prayer is very powerful. Well, Jesus astonished the woman, the disciples, the Samaritan community, because the Samaritans come back and they hear and they believe. How could Jesus astonish them? Because he wouldn't be constrained by cultural and religious differences or moral judgments. The Messiah is not restrained by moral judgments. Think about that. And how often do we kind of step in and make moral judgments. One of my favorite Bible verses, as you might imagine, is Matthew 25, where it says, "And I was in prison and you visited me." But right before that, he says, the Son of Man's going to come back and he's going to separate the sheep from the goats. The Son of Man will separate the sheep from the goats. Nowhere in there does it say, "And I'm going to need your help, Nancy." So since he doesn't need my help, I'm going to let him work on that, and I'm just going to keep loving his people, all of his people. We live in a world where political and religious beliefs divide our community. We have essentially two countries living in one space. Sometimes it turns toxic and violent. We need the astonishing love and acceptance of Jesus, but it makes us uncomfortable, because we've been taught that our truth is the only truth. And we believe that. Our mission is to convince the other people to come to our side and think like we think. Our job is to wage war against those who believe differently. It's not popular to advocate for inclusive thinking, especially not when we're including Muslims or inmates or those gay people. Jesus astonished people while he was on earth, speaking to women and lepers, healing on the Sabbath, eating with prostitutes and tax collectors. When the adulteress was brought before him, and I always wonder where the guy was, he said, "Let he who is without sin cast the first stone." And as everybody wandered off, he says to her, "Where's your accusers?" She didn't have any idea. He said, "Well, then go and sin no more. Go and sin no more." That seems a bit out of reach for us. But Jesus forgives all that is past and allows us to move forward, washed clean. I think there's some important questions that this story, this astonishing story, brings up. Is our faith validated by exclusiveness? By who we think gets left out and gets in? Is that what Jesus taught? Today we see Jesus pushing beyond cultural convention, include and embrace the outsider. A group of former enemies, Jews and Samaritans, walking back to town to eat together, to spend 2 days together. Astonishing. The woman who was an outcast becomes the great evangelist. She brings everybody, and it says, and many believed. Other than the Apostle Paul, this is like the most evangelical story in the Bible. Jesus loved her into personhood and into human dignity. It's easier not to think of individuals, but to think of labels. It's easier for me to think about those inmates, the Dems, the Trumpers, those gays. It's a miracle when a statistic becomes a face. The grace of God in Jesus Christ transforms anonymity into individuality. The heart of our faith is a wondrous love that did not condemn a Samaritan woman for immorality, did not exclude her for religion, race, or gender, accepted and loved her back to humanity, back to her status as a child of God. That's what I try to do in the jail. Let them know God loves them. It's a love offered to you, no matter how excluded you've been. It comes to affirm you. No matter what words others have used to define you, no matter what words you have used to describe and define yourself, the one permanent thing, indestructible truth about you is that you are a child of God. Jesus died for you. Astonishing. Jesus took his friends to Samaria one day to make sure they understood. He took the long cut. To receive this living water, we don't have to drag our buckets to the well and back home. We just need to ask. And it rains all over us. Living water. Astonishing.